Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners meeting, as well as the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board of Directors meeting. It is 12:08, and I would ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll.
Sure. Commissioner Carrington, Commissioner Duncan Hall, Commissioner Apostolo, and Chairman Ritchie.
Present. We have a quorum, so we'll officially call the order at 12:09 p.m. on Thursday, February 19th, 2026. And with that, the next order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would ask Commissioner Apostolo to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next item is public communication. I believe we have one individual who signed up, Larry Franklin. Mr. Franklin, you want to come and take a seat? You have 3 minutes.
I think some of you may know Mr. Franklin. He's a friend of the Housing Authority and does a lot of good work in the community. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you all for having me. Thank you all for the service that you do. I came so unprepared, right? I came just to watch. But so I'm from, affordable housing. When I grew up in Booker T, it was amazing to me. But what I watch is my mother have to go back and forth to the grocery store. And must I mention, I'm in the food industry, so I grow vegetables here in town, right? Indoors, hydroponically. And I remember my mother having to catch multiple buses to get to the grocery store, multiple buses to get back. Took out so much time out of her day. So what if we saw a retail space inside of every housing complex that provided service in terms of food to that community? I'm talking about local food, healthy food, just like you go to Whole Foods, you know, you shop, you want the best. But what if you brought it to their front door? I think that would be really impactful and beneficial to our communities and our residents. I think that it would save time, not just save time, but really increase the quality of their health while they're under everybody's watch. And like I said, I'm so unprepared. So, you know, yeah, that's it. That's all. And I'll be back to talk more about it.
That's great. Could we ask a quick question?
Absolutely.
So you've done a little bit of work with us and sustainable food mm-hmm. for our residents, especially in parts of East Austin that are food deserts. That's been a concern for us. Can you tell the board in maybe just a minute or less how you're working to address it systemically?
So what I did was coming from the projects, I became a commissioner, right? And I pushed for the Austin-Travis County Food Plan. We got the Austin-Travis County Food Plan adopted by City Council, just as well as accepted by City Council. Following that, we were able to acquire $250,000 from Travis County. And from that time, I resigned as a commissioner because I felt like it would be a conflict of interest. I crossed over to consulting, and now I'm part of the consulting team to implement the Austin-Travis County Food Plan because I understand the value of good quality food. A lot of times, a lot of the diseases that we face are based off of our diets, especially black and browns, like diabetes, high blood pressure. That comes from a lot of stress and a poor diet. And it's like, okay, how could we increase the quality of the people? Well, we increase the quality of the people by putting good quality food right in their face. So, you know, and I own a couple of companies and stuff like that, you know, but that's really not important. The most important thing is that we all develop a relationship so that when we're ready to take fight on this idea, we have the buy-in from the most important people as it relates to the people that we're trying to serve. And if you think about it, we don't have any service like that providing our people. Instead, they have to use public transportation to get where they need to be. That's time out of the day. If we can give them that time back, that's amazing. If we can increase the quality of their health, that's amazing. If we could build a better future by introducing their kids to what it's like to shop for good quality food, that's amazing. I don't know about you, but I could die on that.
So I have a question, and it's more older guy, so I don't hear as well. But were you saying a food plan or food bank?
No, so take a step back, right, if you don't mind me. So, Commissioner, food policy, from from commissioner, I resigned, crossed over into consulting. And that's because Austin, Travis County had developed a food plan.
Plan.
Yes, sir.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that's like kind of the back end. Like when I look into the future, I'm like, okay, what's best for our people? I'm talking about black, brown, and white. Because not just black people in the projects, you got brown people in the projects. We call them the projects, sorry about that. Affordable housing. You got black people in affordable housing, you got brown people in affordable housing, and you got white people in affordable housing. And a lot of times, these people don't have access to good quality food. And then when you introduce it to them, because they've never been introduced to it, they have no idea what it is.
Right.
So how about we bring it straight to their front door?
Yeah, that part. So let me ask Sylvia.
We're going too deep, y'all. I'm just here to talk with y'all a little bit. Now, I ain't got it all figured out right now.
I had a question for you. So I know some time ago we started gardens at different developments. Kind of where is that? What has taken place there? I mean, I get what he's saying, but I'm just thinking if we got, you know, vibrant gardens going on, seemed like that would be part of it because, again, going back, I guess it was 2015, when Preston was president of NARA, we went out to California. We got the development, but they went from A to Z where they had the fish in the tank. They could take the fish. The residents, you know, grew the fish, fried them. Then they did the vegetables. They could do canning.
Aquaponics.
They did everything on
site. That's too much. People just want to buy food.
But what I'm getting to is some of the residents, they get to sell the food to make income, and they sell it to residents that are on property.
Understandable, but you know, what I would like you to understand, if you can wrap your mind around it, it takes a certain type of person to grow food. It's not a, like, everybody in here grows food. You know, like, you may got a couple of bushes in your yard, right? But it takes a certain type of person to grow food. And what I've learned through my experience, because I also belong to Chalmers Court, right? We had a community garden there. It takes a certain type of person to grow food. So I'm not saying I'm encouraging the community to grow food. What I'm saying is with the resources that we have as a collective, let's bring food to the community. And if somebody's interested, sure, there'll be an avenue for you to take. But right now, I know those people because I come from that environment. I know what they got to do to get their food. And I know their food is not the best quality food. Do you go to Whole Foods?
I do not. I'll tell you. I'm
okay.
HEB.
So if you've ever eaten Whole Foods, it does differ on your digestive system. Your bowel movements are different. And what I want to do is I want to bring Whole Foods to affordable housing because they deserve it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. Your comments made me think about the gardens because to me, it's not one or the other. You can have multiple approaches to addressing the food deserts.
And so those things are manifest as a byproduct of people having access to healthy food. What is that? Oh, that's lettuce. How do I do that? Oh, this is how you do it. As a matter of fact, we have space and opportunity over there to do it. It's a byproduct. It's not the first product.
So let's do this. So glad you're here.
Y'all are killing me with these questions.
I told you, put you on the spot. We obviously are very proud of our community gardens at so many of our properties.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to maybe ask is if you would join a visit with Leilani Lim-Viejas and get Jimmy Teasdale into the conversation as well. And then working through Sylvia, we'll come back and provide some additional information to the board because obviously there's some interest in it. But really appreciate all that you're doing and the community. And glad you're here today.
Look, man, I want a grocery store inside the projects, okay? Can we get to that point? Thank you, though, for inviting me.
Nice to see you.
Thank you for encouraging me to speak, too, brother.
All right.
Thank you.
Commissioner, just to give you a quick...
Do you want me to answer? Would you like me to answer your question,
but
Mr. Chairman?
Have someone else okay. To speak, but...
No. Sorry. We're going to feel free to join that conversation, but, yeah. But we're going to wrap up the conversation. Go ahead and report out in the gardens. Is there any more public comment? We want to continue with that, and then we want to keep this moving at pace. Big agenda today.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just very high level. We have had some community gardens at several of our properties, including Gaston Place, Meadowbrook, at Chalmers as well. And as he said, it really does depend on the person. There are times that it's just gangbusters and there's a lot of involvement, but it really is driven by particular people. And once those individuals either move on or, you know, pass on, it does have an impact on just the sustainability of it. And so it's not always as consistent as we would like it to be, but the space is there for any resident who does express interest.
Any other members of the public wishing to speak? Address the board today. We're thrilled to be joined by two ambitious UT undergrads in the journalism program at the University of Texas at Austin. Welcome, Horace. Glad you're here. And glad to have you. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, we'll close the public communication portion of the board meeting. Mm-hmm. We'll go to Citywide Advisory Board. Lupe Garcia had a terrible injury and is just recovering from TFCD surgery.
Next week, actually, we're going to the doctor, yeah, for a follow-up and maybe some physical therapy. Yeah.
He fell and had a
knee injury. So,
why don't you give a quick overview, just the highlights.
Yes, that's great. Citywide Advisory Board, meeting minutes for the HACA Board, February 10th, 2026, 10:30 a.m. Called to order on behalf of Lupe Garcia. Veronica Castillo-Perez, CWAB Vice President, called the meeting to order at 10:35 a.m. Michael Gerber wished the Citywide Advisory Board a happy Black History Month and happy Valentine's Day. We would like to thank our HACA maintenance team and property managers who work nights and weekends to ensure that our properties are safe during the winter storm. Leilani Limbiegas, Senior Director of Community Development. HACA will be closed on Monday, February 16th, in observance of President's Day holiday. We are also accepting applications for the 2026 HACA Resident Scholarship Program. Please visit the website. The deadline is March 20th. Daniel Ruiz, Homeownership Manager. The Prospect Heights Home Dedication Event with Habitat for Humanity was a great success. 12 HACA families are excited to finalize the last steps to finally receive the keys to their new home. Coronado Resident Council, Kendra Esther, President, shared that she is the new HACA Resident Safety Ambassador Program at Coronado. Meeting adjourned. Jerry Dawson, President of Goodrich, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Thelma Pinnell, President of North Loop, seconded the motion, and the meeting adjourned at 11:26 a.m. I know I've been in contact with her several times. I spoke to her just yesterday, actually, and she's doing okay. I know that Mary was there the day that it happened, so she's in recovery stages right now and probably having to go through physical therapy. That's why she's not here today. But yeah, we've been checking up on her.
We definitely can be.
Almost daily.
But she sounded pretty good over the phone when she was. She'll be back in fighting form. I'm sure very soon. Absolutely, and we will from the board as soon as it's appropriate to do so. Okay, so thank you very much. Commissioners, we're going to turn to the plan for today is to do the consent agenda real quick. The idea behind the consent agenda, again, is stuff you've seen largely year over year over year, and it should be pretty straightforward to just approve it without too much debate. And then we want to go into executive session because we have Kate Goodrich here from K&L Gates. We have our counsel, Lauren Aldrich, and I'm going to rope Sarah Scott in as well, our counsel from Coast Rose. To talk about a variety of issues. And I expect that executive session will take probably about 30 minutes, maybe just a little bit longer. And folks are welcome to go next door to the conference room to hang out in there while the board convenes for that. And then we'll come back and we'll take all the action items. And I know a couple of folks have indicated that they need to be out of here by about 2:45. So just planning purposes.
Actually, I need to be out of here.
We're going to go quick then. factoring in that we need to be done by 2, we'll go to the consent agenda. On the consent agenda is item 1 is the board minutes from last month. Item 2 is resolution 2931, approving multiple vendor contracts for vacancy cleaning, painting, and other repairs. And item number 3 is our resolution number 2934, approving various vendor contracts for integrated pest management at all of our HACA properties and the administration and lease offices. And we would ask you all to approve those in block as part of the consent agenda. Duncan Hall moves. Apostola seconds. Is there any discussion about the consent agenda? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. All opposed. And the consent agenda passed. Thank you so much. Commissioners, we'll now go into executive session. Let me read the... The board's going to go into executive session, closing its meeting to the public pursuant to Texas Government Code 551.071 for consultations with the attorneys regarding legal advice, pending or contemplated litigation, or settlement offer. B, Section 551.072 of the Government Code for discussion about the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property. C, Section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee. Or to hear a complaint or charge filed against an officer or employee, or D, we need Suzanne and Ron, or Section 551.087 of the Texas Government Code to discuss certain economic development negotiations.
At Rio Grande campus, this is my understanding.
I believe that. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're not planning to do a live broadcast, but they're going to ask if they're going to do some kind of a archive of it. So that's all I saw. All right. Do we have 1, 2, 3? Okay.
Oh,
right here.
Okay.
It's 6 o'clock. It's 5, I believe.
Would you like us to do that one first?
Just go back and listen to the invite.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chair, would you like to go ahead and get started?
Yes. Let's go
ahead. All right. So we're up to action item number 4, which is the presentation, discussion, possible action on 2935 operating budgets for fiscal year FY 2627. I'm going to turn it over to Barbara Chen for a very brief overview.
Good afternoon, here we are here to present the fiscal year 2027, our fiscal year end March 31st.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and colleagues. Here we are to present the fiscal year March 31st, 2027 financial operating budget that you have the complete, very detailed package included in the board package. So I put it in the summary here. So we are going to go over the highlighted items. So if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Okay. Second, let me move. Okay. Now, as you can see, this is the first page is a summary all together, tell you that the current year, the proposed budget, 2027 proposed budget compared to and also the fiscal year approved the budget. So as you can see, the overall revenue for fiscal year 2027, the total revenue will be $881,287,306. The big item, the biggest item is going to be the same as our hub expenses. And this year, the hub expenses increased over $96 million. That is a combination of our SHCC program. SHCC program itself, due to the higher rent, higher unit, is going to be about $90 million increase for our SHCC program. In addition to that, we also have some increase in hub expenses. Like this year, we started to build how the other housing authority. So that is increase our hub budget by about $2.5 million in 2027. In addition to that, we also has the city local voucher program. It's also increased about $2.3 million for 2027 compared to 2026. That is 100% funded by the city's money. And also with a more more PBB units that those that the board approved the past the PBB units. So overall, we have an increase in $96.3 million just in hub expenses and revenue. And in the other item, the other revenue pretty consistent to last year's. Do you have any question about the revenue? No? Okay. Then we'll go to the summary of our operating expenses is different category. The first one is our administrative expenses. The administrative expenses include our payroll expenses, including our legal office supplies, office expenses, management fees, that increased about $2.9 million from 26. The total request is $29,072,123. That's due to the employee salary merit increase. And also the big chunk, the big increases or item is also in our administrative contract maintenance expenses and the consulting fees, consulting expenses. Because one is we have the increase in the AHC for development. We also has a little bit increase in the consultant for the Rosewood and Santa Rita redevelopment. So that is also a small increase in our consulting fees. The next item is our tenant service. Actually, tenant service is a little bit decreased. That we are this year is $2,796,837, which is lower, $500,000 lower than last year. I have to apologize here because last year when we did the budget, that we had a lot of the we charge every all of the PBRA grant and the ROS grant in the tenant service. But when we into the process operation, we realize some of them we have to pay as administrative, just kind of reclass. So that's one of the reason has a huge decrease. Also, we have a less program. Like we did not, the big item is that we did last year, we did budget about $200,000 for the digital literacy training course, which we do not have any this year. That's another $200,000 reduction compared to last year's budget. The next one is the utility expenses. The utility expenses increased a little bit. Part of it is because of this office building that we complete. The constructions of the employee are coming back. And also, I forgot my notes there. I forgot to put. It's also AMP properties. So that's all the increase about the usage, due to the usage, high usage for the next year. The next item is the ordinary maintenance and maintenance and the operational expenses. That is $4,209,144. Which is about a little bit over $500,000 higher, mainly because of a higher maintenance contract cost, and there was also a small increase in our maintenance employees' merit increase and the maintenance, the AMP property, now they also had small increase in about $90,000 overall in the maintenance contract expenses for those A properties. The next one is the protective service that we are asking $401,859 for 2027, which is the increase from last year. It's $110,000 higher. One of the major items is the new security camera. We are going to install that in the two property on our PBIA properties. That those two only is all very close to $80,000, more a little bit over for $80,000. So that's why we had likely high increase about $110,000. The next one is our general expenses. The general expenses we asking $12,336,459, which is the increase about $817,000. It's due to all insurance. Our employee medical insurance is 12% increase. The property and liability insurance, mainly that's it. That's the three items, three kind of expenses cause this overall increase. Our employee health insurance itself is $500,000 increase. The very last item is our housing assistance payment. We are asking the board about $820,708,835, which is kind of a pass-through, a wash from the revenue side. And I already explained that's an increase because of higher lease up and higher rent. Okay, new program from our HCV programs. Okay, any question about this? The summer? Yes.
The building next to us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How does that fit in?
The right next to was the wheel.
Yeah.
No, we don't collect, but we get a dollar, yes. But we do maintain
$1
a year. $1 a year, right. Yes, we pay for the landscaping, those kind of things outside, outdoor.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yes, that's it.
Excellent. And ADAPT is our tenant there, is that right?
Yeah, they are. This is headed by Bob Costa, Stephanie Thomas, and Bob is not there. So the organization has them.
So the organization
has them? They're definitely having it. I love to say, really, after our first big event here, the celebration of July, 150 people came. It was really joyful because they were going to cram everybody into that little building. We said, why don't you come on up here and do it here? And it was really it was inspiring to see, what ADAPT anchors in terms of independence for people with physical disabilities. And so it was an inspiring thing, but separate from the building.
It made the news.
Yeah, it
is. Okay. Any additional questions on the budget?
No, we have a few more pages.
Oh, really?
This is a summary, but
yeah,
we can go through the details.
Well, no.
No, let's just deal with the stuff.
Yeah, let's just
keep
going. Yeah, we've got another.
Oh, okay, sure.
You're going to lose us, a couple of us.
All right.
I know I'm leaving in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's right. So, commissioners, would anyone like to make a motion on...
Karen, you move.
And a comment, in moving through this, all staff had the opportunity to have input in their section or their division budget.
Absolutely. In fact, they were the ones who generated
from the bottom up.
Correct.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. And then we met as an executive team to make any adjustments or tweaks to it. But yes.
I guess the other thing, and reading through the insurance business, and Barbara, as you noted, our insurance increased
$11.9 increase.
I mean, and reading through this, it looked like you all did as good a job as possible in being able to get adequate, satisfactory coverage and for a decent price. But, I mean, all I see is that that's going to continue to increase.
Exactly. And Gloria will go into a little bit more detail on item six.
Are we looking at, and maybe this is a question another time, but are we looking at self-insurance?
We have, and that was part of the assessment, and Gloria will go into detail. It was not feasible to do that. Okay. Did we do the final vote? We did. I don't think we, no.
We took the motion and the second.
Exactly. We haven't voted. So,
any more questions? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Good job, Barbara and staff. I have an idea of how much work went in to getting all of this put together. So, good job. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you, Barbara. All right. Up next is item five. Let's go over resolution 2936, approval of the revised housing choice voucher utility allowance schedules. And I'll turn it over to Laura Bodai.
Can I just make one quick comment before we leave it, Laura? You're absolutely right how difficult the budget is. We spent months on this. And hey, Barbara, I just want to acknowledge, Barbara has spent, her team has spent months on this. The budget process here is grueling as it happens. It's really two budget processes. It's Michael's property budgets, and then that all has to get factored in. Then we pray and hope that we get the right numbers out of HUD. And then it all has to be, you know, amalgamated by Barbara and her team. And we are the envy of housing authorities having a budget department, a budget and finance function led by someone with Barbara's capabilities that make it go so seamlessly. I just want to say we spent too short of a time on it, but thank you and congratulations on producing this. Absolutely. But thank
exactly.
you, really.
Well, we're also the envy because we have $800,000. $888,000 in the bank or somewhere.
Something like that, yes. Okay, Laura.
Good afternoon, everyone. Board members, fellow HACA staff, and guests. My name is Laura Bodai. I'm the Vice President of the Assisted Housing Department here at HACA. I'm here today to present the annual update to the Housing Choice Voucher Utility Allowance Schedules. As you know, HUD requires all public housing authorities to review utility costs each year and update the schedules when any category changes 10% or more. This year, our third-party consultant, the NELRA Company, who we consult with each year, they completed the study and compared current utility rates with last year's. Their review found several changes that exceeded the federal threshold, including increases in natural gas, water and sewer, and trash collection. Also higher fixed monthly electric charges. Because of this, these shifts, updated utility allowance schedules are required. The revised schedules reflect current utility costs across all major unit types. We have the multifamily schedule, the single family, the duplex schedule, the townhouses, and manufactured homes. If approved today, the updated standard utility allowance schedules will take effect June 1st, 2026 for all new admissions and annual reexaminations. I recommend adoption of the revised schedules as presented. We appreciate your continued support. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Yeah, so I got a couple of questions. So, so the gas rate increased by 43%, and then I saw where the monthly service charge is an additional 18%.
Yeah. That's the largest, the natural gas rate, correctly stated. It's a very large increase, and that's that is the primary increase. You'll notice that also most others didn't increase either at all or nominally. Yeah.
Well, I see where the sewer did increase by 19%, between 17 and 19%. It's not easy to do about the increase in gas because it's just, it's a volatile commodity. So, all right.
In terms of the increase in the utility allowance, have you all now looked at what kind of impact this might have on the rental income?
The budget of our HAP?
Their utilities are going up.
Right.
So there's a maximum, and how does the tenant income, how much are we going to be penalized,
I understand what you're saying. So the HAP, our HAP is going to increase, which happens every year. We will get, if you remember too, like our budget authority, what we're rewarded every year is based on what we spent the previous year, right? So our HAP, it's built into the model essentially. So we'll get refunded for any increase that we see due to utility costs next year. Essentially, we will be able to house, we'll go through the HAP a little bit faster, so to say, housing less families, but we are able to house more families this year because of the increased cost last year. So it's just kind of does that make sense? It we catch up. No. No, this is an increase in the utility allowance that they're provided. So if their bills increase because of increased charges, the utility allowance that we provide them is also increasing.
It's still useful, but it means like our ability to serve more people becomes more constrained because we don't have, there's not more money coming from the government. So it has an impact on how many more people we able to serve.
Sure, but also looking at like last year our utility allowance costs went up also, so our budget authority increased this year partly because of the increased costs of last year. So again, it will catch up. It's a timing issue.
It's a year behind.
Exactly. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
So commissioners, at this point, we are ready to entertain a motion.
There's been a motion made and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Next item is the employee medical, dental, and vision insurance with United Health.
And I believe we also have Janet Forbes that has joined in virtually in case there's additional questions.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, and staff guests. I'm Gloria Morgan, VP of Human Capital. I'm here to present resolution number 2937 for discussion and approval of renewal of employee medical, dental, and vision insurance coverage. The board is being asked to approve the renewal of the contract for employee medical insurance with United Healthcare. As part of our comprehensive compensation package, the Housing Authority offers our employees coverage for regular full-time employees for medical, dental, and vision. Over the past several months, we did meet with Gallagher to discuss possible solutions to the increase in rising healthcare costs. And after those discussions and their negotiations back and forth with United Healthcare, it originally came in at a 29% rate increase. Further negotiations with United brought the coverage down to about 11% for us. So this year we're seeing an 11% increase in our medical coverage, 11.9, so round up to 12. There was also an increase in our dental coverage, the DHMO plan. We received a 7% rate increase for that and an 8.2% rate increase for the PPO. And that was from last year. So based on what was brought to us, we did decide to go out for bid this year. In the request for proposals, we did receive 8 proposals back. 8 carriers did submit, and in your packet, they are listed there. We had Cigna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Curative, Garnet, Every Health, and Texas Health Benefits Pool. HACA received two quotes for self-insured, so we did look at self-insurance from plans from United Healthcare and also High Plains Health and Nationwide SL. The proposals were received and reviewed by Gallagher in order for them to provide a recommendation to HACA. As you can see, Cigna's proposal would result in a 14.5% increase for our agency, as Cigna also had a dual option which they provided, which would result in an 11.8% increase. Blue Cross Blue Shield's proposal would result in a 15.9%. Aetna's proposal would result in a 36.4% increase. And Curitas' proposal would result in a 10.2% increase, and Garner's proposal would result in a 4.6 to a 7.7 increase to the agency. Every Health and Texas Health Benefits Pool decided not to submit proposals at this time. So through subsequent series of negotiations between United Healthcare and Gallagher, United Healthcare proposed the 11.9% rate increase with the following revisions made to our current plan. We would be raising our deductible currently from $500 to $1,000 for an individual and to $2,000 for a family. Increase the out-of-pocket maximum from $2,000 to $4,000 for individual and to $8,000 for the family. We would decrease the visit co-pays from $25 down to $10 per visit. And children under the age of 19 are still covered at 100%. An increase in specialist visit co-pays would go from $50 to $60 per visit. A decrease on urgent care co-pays would result from $75 down to $25 per visit. There would be an increase in emergency room co-pay from $300 to $500 after the deductible is met. For some reason, we saw an increase in staff going to the emergency room. I think it may be due to the fact that a lot of emergency rooms now are standalone, and folks are getting a little confused and thinking it's an urgent care center, and once they get there, they find out they're being charged for an emergency room visit. So we were not able to verify that, but that was my thought on that and some others' reputation.
But do you have the data of those who are going to urgent care? Has there been an increase in those numbers?
Not in the urgent care.
Okay.
So maybe this will steer people to go to urgent care before going to the emergency room as well.
And especially with the decrease in the copay going from 75 to 25, right. That will definitely help.
I guess I'm really concerned about number 10 on this list because people are going to be discouraged from getting any type of test, imaging test, especially if they're going to have to pay 100% or $500 copay. That's serious.
It's very serious.
So there's nothing that could be done about that.
In order to offset that, during open enrollment, I typically recommend, since HACA offers the flexible spending account where you can have money set aside out of your check to cover medical expenses, in the past I've always encouraged staff to put at least what the deductible amount is, so they're not having to come out of their pocket for the deductible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in this case, I would encourage them to put a little bit more into the flexible spending account to cover if they think they're going to have any of these tests done.
Because if they're paying that kind of money for each test, they're not going to have them done.
How our staff actually set up this? Is that information that you have?
We do have quite a few staff. I want to say it's around 60 to 70 of our staff utilize the flex spending account.
And unfortunately, and Janet and Gloria can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but we can't necessarily sort of pick and choose some of these items. They're all sort of plans. And this one just seemed to be the most attractive out of the options that we had available to us. But we couldn't just like swap out the ones that we didn't like. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't a build-your-own plan.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's a great deal of negotiation that went on to get these figures. I know that, to be sure. But this one just sort of shocked me because from going from zero up to 500 is significant.
Yeah. And we've had a very rich plan over the years. I mean, our deductible being at $500 is unheard of. Mm-hmm. And we've just got to come up to industry and be competitive. I know it's not competitive to raise the deductible, but that's what the deductible is. I haven't seen a $500 deductible anywhere.
Because we have some employees that are not utilizing our health care because they get it someplace else.
Basically, all of our employees do.
But 100 people out. So how many employees do we have that are on our health care program?
It is 200 and on page.
Close to everybody?
Yeah.
One of the big changes we're making is that if a spouse has the ability to get health insurance at their job, they have to accept it there. They don't have to sign off the waiver saying they can't get health care.
That was sort of where I was going with that.
Yes.
You have it available.
Yes. And that's what we're implementing this year. If your spouse has coverage elsewhere, they'll have to go on their own insurance, and they'll have to sign an affidavit stating that their spouse does not have coverage elsewhere, and that's only if they're employed. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any idea how many employees that would be?
I don't at this time. We won't know until open enrollment.
This will be the first time that we'll have this affidavit. This will be the first time. We decided to wait until this coming year.
And the tobacco surcharge has been in place. Hopefully, if you use tobacco products, well, nicotine products, then there's a $50 surcharge for that.
And we have pretty high utilization.
There's a very high utilization. Unfortunately, it may come down. We just never know. We don't know who's going to get sick, who's going to develop what conditions. And that's insurance, the nature of insurance.
Gloria, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Janet.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for letting me join virtually. I'm on the road today. I thought it might be helpful to also mention that when we were going through and evaluating what to do with the deductible, and as Sylvia mentioned, it is true on a fully insured plan, we did evaluate self-funding. It was not financially feasible to go that direction this year, but we will continue to reevaluate that every year. But on a fully insured basis, the plans are filed with the state, so where you might want to make one change to one component in the plan is automatically going to change other components in the plan. So just looking for a plan that met the needs of really a lot of people. We did look at deductible. We did benchmark. We did look at how many people had met the $500 deductible. And there was a little over almost 55% of the HACA population spent less than $500. And when we looked at the $500 to $1,000 threshold, there was another roughly 21-22%. So you have a little over 75% of your population that's spending under $1,000. So you've got folks, you're still going to have your large claimants, but, you know, we felt that the impact to the majority of the organization to increase the deductible, still stay competitive in the marketplace with the plan design was why we went that direction. And the other thing I was going to mention, too, in terms of utilization, when United Healthcare looked at the renewal, utilization, when you look at claims versus premiums, so that's the money that you're paying to United Healthcare to pay for claims, was less than the money that's being spent on claims. So when they looked at the renewal and ran the renewal, the utilization, or what we call the medical loss ratio, when you compare premium versus claim, 111%, meaning for every.
Janet, we lost you. Okay. There you are. You broke up right after you said the 111% utilization. Sorry, Janet. We're not getting a good signal. But I think suffice to say, this was. We felt that the most cost-effective plan And it really helped to preserve the majority of the components of the plan that we have, knowing that it was going to have hopefully the least amount of impact to the majority of the employees. So with that, are there any additional questions? If not, we can go ahead and proceed with if anyone would like to make a motion on the renewal.
I'll second.
Thank you.
First item is the consent agenda, and so that's to approve the minutes of the day dating and January 15th. There's no use. Second, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And motion passes. The action item for Austin Board of Investment Corporation is resolution 00287.
Thank you, Commissioners, staff and guests. Ann Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for the Housing Authority. So I've been coming to you with a lot of actions about Santa Rita. So this is one more. We have two resolutions for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, two resolutions for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, one for Santa Rita East and one for Santa Rita West on each agenda. So we're doing this in two phases. And the action today is focused primarily on Santa Rita West. You may remember that we submitted an application and were awarded 9% tax credits for Santa Rita West. And so as part of that application, we took something, a scoring item called readiness to proceed. And what that means is one of the actions that we have to take is that we have to demonstrate site control, that we own the land by March 31st. So what we are going towards today is to achieve ownership of that land by the new tax credit partnerships. You may remember that for all of our redevelopments, HACA always maintains ownership of the land and then ground leases the land to the partnership to build the properties. So right now there is a ground lease in place with HACA and the current owner of Santa Rita, Pathways at Santa Rita Courts, LLC. So with this, and that's the owner that has owned it since the RAD conversion that we did many years ago. So with this action, we're ground leasing to two. Sarah's getting here to tell you all the things I got wrong. We're going to be ground leasing the land to these two tax credit partnerships that will ultimately own the land when we close on these deals. And I will come back with lots of details around each of the deal as you ultimately authorize the big closing. So renderings and sources and uses and partners and all the details. In the next few months, but for now, we just need a procedural vote to allow us to do this. Is there anything you want to add?
No.
Okay.
You did a good job.
You got it right. We did. I called her.
No, but she mentioned that as soon as I walked in.
That's too funny. We'll let you know, Mary, next time.
Great minds think alike.
So then the action that's being requested right now, there's actually four actions related to this item. And the first one is to facilitate the bifurcation into Santa Rita West and Santa Rita West. Pause AAHC over the unsubsidiary pathways at Santa Rita Courts to execute an agreement of limited partnership. Number three, cause the partnership to enter into seller financing for the project. And then number four, calls AAHC and the partner to execute the needs of further documentation.
seconds, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Now on to item number three,
which is resolution 00288, and this concerns Santa Rita Courts East. Do you want to do it again, or?
Oh, no, we're doing the same thing.
Okay. Four actions, facilitate the application. Number two, cause AAHC holding a subsidiary to the limited partnership, execute a limited partnership agreement, cause the partnership to enter into consortium instance, and then four, cause the partnership to execute such documents necessary to hold the name. Do I hear a motion? Okay, second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Any opposed? Then that is the last item for possibly for the consideration. So with that, I would ask for a motion to close meeting. I will move for Mary moves. Our seconds. I don't have a clock. So
158.
The Austin Board of County Corporation meeting is closed. Do you want? So now we move back to the item number seven.
Number seven.
Seven.
It's the same action.
So all those in favor?
Yes. Motion.
And resolution 02938.
Correct.
Okay,
Before we leave these two items, I just knew because we have two folks who are learning about what we're doing at Santa Rita Courts. Sorry to speak to y'all, but I want to play to the crowd. What you just heard is really an incredible decision because the housing authority is in possession of what's the oldest public housing property in the United States under the 1937 housing, Santa Rita Courts. The redevelopment of that project is an incredibly complex thing, and it's not possible using the financing tools that are out there to just treat the property as one in one fell swoop. We've got to divide it up because we need different types of financing to make different pieces of it happen. There's the west side of it that's using one set of financing tools. The middle of it, the east side that we're calling it, which is really the central center of it, is using a different set of financing tools. And then on the far east side, the real east side, is this whole historic preservation area, areas that Lyndon Johnson would have walked on and visited family at that. And in fact, invited families from there to go to Washington, D.C. when he signed the Civil Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act. So it's a huge thing. And we've worked with residents like Lou Baker-Sue, who's not here today, but we've asked them, folks who have lived there for many, many years, to leave their homes, the only homes that they've known for, in many cases, for the last couple of decades, and to take a chance and to knowing that something better is going to come along. And a lot of the folks in this room have really done incredible work trying to figure out how to piece that puzzle together. So at the end of this, I'm going to ask Anne to give you any other information you want, but it really is an amazing story, and we just sort of flew through it, kind of like the budget earlier today. We just sort of fly through these things. But it's all about people and real people's lives. How many new units are going to be in there?
200. 200.
Out of 97. 97 now, 200
some. 97 today. 97 families helped today. We're going to help more than 200 families, and that's going to translate if, you know, every household has, you know, two to three people in it, and you're talking, you know, 500 people in East Austin's lives are going to be really transformed by the decision that the board made. There's more decisions to come, but I just don't want you to. We flew through it really quick. I just think it's worth taking note of what you did. So thank you, board.
How many more times will we see this?
You will
see these. You'll
definitely see Santa Rita West one more. You'll see both of them again, for sure. West at least once, East at least once. Just what, will there be any more for East?
Just once for each. Just once for each before we're ready to close, when we have all the terms of the financing ready. And then we usually try to build in like any permanent conversion in the initial approval, but sometimes the sources change and we have to come back at the construction completion.
So at least one more time and make that.
And again, a lot more detail will come before those closings. Sources, uses, plans, unit mix breakdowns, levels of affordability, renderings, all that. The packages that you're used to seeing with me with all the slides, you'll get in for these.
Well,
we're hoping for 2028. Yeah.
Especially West.
We're hoping for 2028. Yeah. Yeah. Our current place in service deadline for West is 12/31/27. So that's for us to get a temporary certificate of occupancy. So moves could actually happen into 2028.
And talking to Ron, I guess yesterday, the day before, and not specifically about these, I gather we don't have a number of equity providers that are beating down our door.
No.
To provide equity for this, the one that has the 9% credit.
Yeah, and not like we have in the past. So our developer partner, Carlton Companies, is working with quite a few lenders and equity providers to try and find someone, but the climate in Texas is just not good now.
What happens if we can't find, do we have the ability to do some kind of bridge financing or something that would preserve the credits and allow us to move forward with the reconstruction?
I'll be honest, I haven't pulled the brain trust together yet to ask that question, to really bring Ron and Suzanne and Coates Rose together to talk about what we would do. We hope that it won't come to that.
Well, Coates Rose has agreed to waive the fees, so
I don't think that's going to equal the amount of equity that we need.
It'll make the whole thing feel a whole lot better.
Nice idea, bud.
Yeah.
We'll have updates for you in the months to come.
It's kind of a scary time.
It's kind of
scary. To need the equity for this 9% transaction.
Yeah.
But, you know, the board has made a lot of really important decisions. The board has made a lot of really important decisions around planning for a rainy day. And if that rainy day is now, we've got some ability to fill some gaps. So, and Ron is also, you know, one of the things that the board also wisely decided was to pursue a bond rating for us. And so we have some tools available to us that other housing authorities might not, because by virtue of our, was it AA minus? A plus rating. We have to play it out. But we have some options. And look, fortunately, by virtue of our track record, people want to do business with us. And so we'll work within the climate to figure it out. But we've had so many complex things that we, you know, do we ever think we get Rosewood done? And yet, you know, we're planning for the grand opening. So that's, give us some time to work through it. But and Commissioner Carrington, we might actually tap your, we might come back to you. can I turn to the President's report real quick? I appreciate that. So we're very excited that we are going to, change. You all approved the name change for the agency. We're going from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to the Austin Housing Authority. That's the name that the agency originally had.
And this is the effect of what date?
We're going to look to do it probably in that June to July timeframe. Yeah, that's kind of the window. You know, you want to plan it out at a time when it's, you know, it comes with a new website. It comes with, you know, new stationery. There's a lot of things that have to sort of end notification of all of our various partners. So we need to do it in a very clean and methodical way.
Right.
It backs up on the 90th anniversary of the agency. And so we wanted to have Ken give just a quick overview of some logo concepts and maybe get y'all to take a quick, you know, do a quick polling of what you think about it as we move to our 90th year.
Yeah, thank you. So we'll go through these. We can go to the next slide. You're going to see three concepts. This first one is the most conservative concept. It basically is taking the seal that we agreed upon, and we're adding just a little ribbon across it. It's subtle. It's clean. It still keeps the stars that we had on the other one. But it would be a very natural, organic usage of the seal. And, you know, something to keep in mind with this one is, you know, the 90th anniversary will be January of 2027. So this seal is still going to be fairly new for folks if we unveil it in June or July. So this would be a pretty easy transition. So you see the logo there and what it would look like on a bottle. Let's take a look at the next slide. This is our second concept. This one is a bit more creative. Again, Connective, who created the original logos, gave us these concepts. In this version, they're playing with the number 90, making it a bit more prominent. And then the seal elements from the original logo are now living within the zero. And then this gives a little bit of space to add an updated tagline for the celebrating 90 years. It's definitely a more fun, kind of playful option to go with. And then let's take a look at concept three, the next slide. And then we have a third version, which is kind of an evolved, going a bit more creative. It has the seal taking over more of the shape of the zero. Celebrating 90 years, obviously, is above the top, and then Austin Housing Authority in the name below. If we look at the next slide, this one also has a couple of color variations that we could play around with. We could make the 90 yellow. This kind of adds back to the icon that's in the zero space, a little bit of a touch of yellow for the sky. So this version is fairly versatile. Let's take a look at the next slide. And then now we see, going back, the original seal that we'll unveil this summer, and then concept one, two, or three. What I'm so grateful to with Connective, they've been amazing partners, is that, honestly, in my opinion, they gave us an amazing seal, and now they've given us three concepts for the 90th anniversary that any one of them would work beautifully. So it's really a matter of just preference. So I would love to hear your feedback or any questions you might have. I'm certainly happy to tell you which way I'm leaning, but I don't want to bias your opinion. So let me know what you think. If you want to. Correct. That's right. Yeah. So they would only be used during 2027. So it'd be a limited edition logo, if you will.
Used on any merchandise that we.
That's right. Yeah, we can have a lot of fun with it. If we wanted to do polo potentially. I know we had, an 80th anniversary polo. Stickers are certainly popular.
Yeah. Okay.
Water bottles.
We are ordering some new water bottles too. The new logo. Yep.
Yeah.
The first one, the top one was like.
Concept one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm seeing nods.
And while I see what's happening in 2 and 3, to me the 0 gets lost in 2 and 3, and I vote for door number 1.
Okay.
So
the word is spoken, so that's great.
Easy enough, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about it quite a bit, and Mike and Sylvia as well, and our preference was... Was what?
Why you got this? Why you gone so far?
We were evenly voting for 1 or 3. So I think 1. What I really, going back to what I was saying, what I really love about 1 is that it doesn't take away from the work we put into the new seal, which is still going to be pretty new in January. So this is a really nice, just subtle evolution of the seal. So great choice.
Well, and I like the fact that we said founded in 90 years, so you don't have to look at the others and go, yeah, 90 years.
Yeah.
Do the math. You don't have to do the math.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, very good. I think we should, yeah. We'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Especially because I don't know if you've seen, but the Austin FC has a secondary logo now, and it has the Ann Richards Bridge in it. We were onto something there with the bridge. It's definitely a nice piece that we added.
Who designed the artwork? Like, who actually drew the artwork? Did you hire someone?
Kayla from Connective is the original artist.
Okay. I just want to make sure there's a concept in copyright law that the physical, you know, person is the owner of the image, unless there's a work for hire agreement in writing. But if she's part of a graphic design, I would imagine that that's a standard transfer of ownership that they do as part of their contracts.
Yeah.
Okay.
She had a team working with her.
Right. So. Okay. So just when we file for the trademarks, I just want to make sure we've got the owners correct, but we can work on that.
We will. Yeah.
Okay.
Great idea. Thank you.
Okay.
Good. It is.
There's a lot of sentiment to celebrate and honor her, and of course the board here wanted to do that as well. We're thrilled that you stayed, beyond thrilled that you stayed, but we didn't want to take the cost of the name change. So we're delighted we stuck with the Carrington, and we get to do a grand opening of that at 4 o'clock on Thursday, March 12th. I hope all of you will come. The idea is to have just sort of an afternoon reception and make it very casual and enjoyable. And it's a beautiful property. I go by it literally every day or 3 times a week, and it's spectacular. Right down the street from another property that we have, the Marston, and it's two very lovely properties that we'd love to show you and honor when it is.
Where is it located?
It's in Southwest Austin, right off of Southwest Parkway.
Right.
So, Vega Road.
Right
across the street, right down the hill.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, and we'll work with y'all in terms of rides and things if people need to transportation there.
Mike, will there be a tour?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll do tours. And the cool thing about this property is that part of it, it's right across from Oak Hill Elementary School. So there's been some marketing, really affirmative marketing to Oak Hill Elementary. I wish I could describe it for you, but if you imagine the St. Andrews property, this site is on the far west side of, on two parcels that St. Andrews owns. The north parcel is the Markson, 200-something-meter property. The south side, which is closest to the elementary school, the public school, is the Carrington. It's a traditional, beautiful apartment building with beautiful, gorgeous views. But on the side closest, on the far south side of the Carrington, closest to the school, They built townhome style apartments there, and it's lovely. And it's been joyful to go by and see families and the interconnectivity between the school. Literally, there's a school crossing over to the, you know, they slowed down traffic to over to, you know, that site. So I think you'll be really, really pleased. And we're excited to be able to show it to you on the 12th. And absolutely, they'll be there. Yep. Yep. And Greg Weaver has been on the real estate board there for years. At St. Andrews, he's a big developer here in the community, but his kids go to St. Andrews, and he's been on the real estate committee there for a number of years. We've worked with Greg, and I'm sure, Ron, that others will be there too. They were pretty present at the last one for the March. So excited to celebrate that. Next board meeting is scheduled for March 17th. There's no board meeting in April. And then we're planning the Rosewood Court ribbon cutting. We were out there earlier this week. We're looking, I think, really hard at May 1st. So maybe the last day of April, potentially, but probably more likely that Friday, May 1st. So we're trying to hone in on that. And that's based on that, May Day, yes, ma'am. So, May Day. Sylvia, is there anything else we need to tell the board?
Yes, there are two things that I wanted to touch on, if I may, commissioners. One, I do have a slide deck that I wanted to share with you on phase two renovations. So we are proceeding with the last part of getting the building renovated. We're not going to stay in this time warp of, you know, one half renovated and the other half not. So this just kind of goes over what the final floor plan will look like. And I know it's tiny to look at, but we are going to be making some great renovations to all spaces, including the assisted housing department, which is on the lower left hand or right hand side. And then we've got the a training room that will be greatly expanded and improved there on the upper side there. And then we kind of move over to a renovated gym, fitness center, and then the planning and development department, as well as the operations and procurement services department on the left-hand side. And then we've got the what we're calling the Beehive. It's an area that the ACC interns will be able to continue their work in the digital inclusion space. It's been the longest partnership. We do have sort of a swing space for the ACC interns right now. They're up on the third floor, but ultimately they're going to be downstairs on the first floor here. It'll make it much easier access from the parking lot, and also as they deploy devices and get them packed up and ready to go to properties. So it makes sense for them to be on the first floor.
Before the fire, they were actually here. They had this room and there was a
right here.
Room here.
That's true. So absolutely.
Just give them a dedicated space. It would be nice.
Yeah.
Question.
Sure.
First one, ma'am. So we have dedicated space for a gym.
We do. Yes. And right over there.
It's the footprint staying almost exactly the same.
It is, yes,
yeah, it's
exactly.
Across the way.
We're just updating it right now. It's circa 1970s, 80s. So this will just bring it back into the 21st century. They might as well be. The equipment is quite antiquated. So we're looking forward to getting all new equipment for use. And I know that's something that has been very high on Ron's list to get that renovated. So we're excited about that. The locker rooms, everything. Yeah, we're going to ask Barbara to write the check. No, she's not here.
I think we have leftover insurance proceeds from before that we used for the first installment. And then we've been setting aside funding for a renovation of this building for some time. We've really neglected this building if it's going to last us into the next,
absolutely,
the next 25 years, we hope, before the next redo.
This is the first renovation ever that we have done to the building since we moved in. So 2006, 2007?
Yeah. And it was built in
Oh, gosh. When was it built?
In 17. The furniture that you see that we're currently occupying now is housed by
the
adjacent. Yeah. That's how old our furniture is.
Yeah, that's the cubicles that we had. Those are hand-me-downs from two tenants before. So it's been time. It's been time to do that. Let's move on, because I don't want to take too long. That's right. And this is on the second level. And this shows we are right-sizing the executive department offices to make them more in line with the other offices. And it's really going to help with connectivity. A lot of walls have been, you know, put up over the years, and now we're kind of making all of the spaces more connected. So it's more of a neighborhoods concept, as I've mentioned in the past. And so we'll have some great meeting space. It really helps to capitalize on the natural light, allowing for more of the folks in workstations to enjoy that natural light. And so we're adding some more collaboration space, adding a nice large meeting space, and we're going to have a break room pretty much in the same footprint as where we are right now. The departments are basically staying in the same spots as we are now. But yeah, next slide. I think we've just got some, that's talking about the ceiling grid. I think we can skip that. This was the concept that we landed on initially. It's the seed concept. Go on, Jorge.
But what you've seen everywhere else is then just going to be carried into.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more pops of blue than you see now. Right now you see a lot of the sage green. I think we're going to incorporate a little bit more blue, and that's going to help with some wayfinding. This is not representative of exactly what it's going to look like. This is more inspiration concepts here. So let's run through those, Jorge. So this is a fitness center. Again, a huge, huge improvement from what we have right now. Again, we're kind of stuck in the 70s and 80s right now. Keep on going, Jorge. These are just more conceptual. This is not what it's going to look like, but it really does touch on the color schemes. And, you know, the carpet is existing. We have that in phase one, so we're going to carry that over into the training room. Keep on going. In the fitness centers?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, we have lockers now, and we will have new lockers, the new fitness center.
So here you mentioned the training room, yet in our budget, we don't have any budget to put out.
We do, yes. Each department has its own budget for particular trainings.
Who's heard of that?
No, there's we do them now.
We do a ton of training.
Every division has its own training budget. And, Laura, I'll pick on you. What's your training budget? And what is, just example, like what are the two or three trainings you have set for next year?
We do lunch and learns for the team members, for managers, supervisors. We do, and we're going to be doing cybersecurity training for all the departments. So, yeah, we definitely invest in our staff in terms of training. Okay, speaking of training room, keep on going, elevator lobby. The stairwells, what UFA has recommended was something that's going to be bright and cheerful, really helping to motivate more employees to use the stairwells for health and wellness, burn some calories and just make it a little bit more fun, some pops of color. And that's it. More to come on that.
Didn't you give us a rough?
Yeah.
What's the range?
Roughly, again, please don't hold me to this, about 8.5 to 9.5 million. Is phase two. We are looking at making some considerable improvements to the elevators.
They are, of course, they date back to when they were built, and so all of that infrastructure is old. And if we're making this type of investment in the building, I think it makes sense to look at how we can improve the infrastructure in the elevators as well.
So the first phase of this was roughly six.
Yep. Just under six.
And I would say for the board, just I think we wanted to just sort of put a pin in this for you all. I would say ballpark, put a pin in, you know, $10 million. It's probably we had in the back of our head, Ron and I have, and Sylvia, we've talked, have always kind of thought this is a substantial piece of real estate, and we want to take care of it, we want it to last. And Ron and I are doing some active work thinking about how we use other parts of the site as well. You know, we've got space above the garages. We've got a lot of space over here. Come in the parking lot. Could we develop something with a partner there? What are we going to do with the third floor? But right now, the market's very soft for commercial real estate, so we're not going to get anyone in on the third floor. So we have easy swing space to move everybody up to that third floor.
Yep.
So we don't have to relocate people to another office building, which is a big expense. We just move people upstairs. It's a nightmare for Jorge and his team in PMI, but generally it's not a bad thing. And it worked really well on phase one. Now we'll just go and, so we'll see some real savings from that. But it's between elevators, HVAC systems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really, one of the mistakes we made, as you heard from all the people walking back and forth, we didn't put, we value engineered out some of the acoustics stuff. So it's a little louder in here than we might wish it were. We're going to be really careful on the next phase to make sure we have good acoustics in there. So ballpark 10 million, and just know that it's coming. But it's a couple months away still, but we wanted you to at least see that, you know, we've now gone through all the properties, and now we think our employees, especially if we're asking them to come back and work here. And the reviews we're getting on phase one, I think, have been pretty encouraging, which is nice.
You're positive, yes.
What's the employee's value? Has TCAD had this property on their books for?
Once we need to count the sense of going to give us value, but I would probably just wild guess. I would probably say, market's soft right now, so that it's easier to say value. I would probably say anywhere from 15 to 10 million. I think one of the biggest things here is the largest per capita parking car in the city block.
Parking.
We'd love to if we could.
Are we already doing that?
I think we already are. The Cypress all hand space, we do rent it out periodically to HD Supply so that they can have their meetings. So we might as well generate some revenue off of it. Yep.
And if we can find another group to take on the third floor, that would be wonderful. One of the things we've thought about is, are there complementary nonprofit partners that, you know, part of our mission is also to kind of lift their capacity too. We also are looking at the broader real estate portfolio. Ron's very involved with that. You know, we purchased a building for Southwest Housing Compliance years ago. The engineering firm that was in there for years and years now has left because of all the I-35 construction, and it's sitting there, you know, empty. Ron's evaluating that. There might be some recommendations to come to the board. You know, we've been hesitant to sell anything, but maybe the time is approaching where maybe we should sell some things that we just either don't need or want to, you know, rethink strategy on. So it's an ongoing thing that Ron and Suzanne are taking the lead on, but others of us are working on, and we'll come back to this board to make, you know, those decisions. Well, it was across the street. It was Horizon Engineering. It's about, I don't know, maybe a quarter of a mile up the other side of the road, on the north side of the
front. Across I-35.
Yeah.
We did. Mm-hmm. And we own a little building next to that one where Green Doors used to be. Remember Frank Fernandez? Is Green Doors still there? Okay.
Wow.
I didn't know that. Wow. The Chalmers property is a great property, and that one we need to think about, you know, when the time's right. Do we want to build more housing there? Do we want to build a workforce and education center there? It kills me to say it. You know, one of the things we talked about with this building was, you know, do we want some portion of our workforce to be in East Austin providing services, and maybe we rent out half of this building and have half of our workforce there and half of our workforce here. You know, there's just a lot to sort of think about in the management of the space. I will also tell you, and Ron's working on, you know, we think a lot about the shopping center, the Oak Springs Shopping Center. If you drive up by, Airport Boulevard, you know, it's full, it's vibrant, it's very much in demand. Ron, how many times a day do you get offers on it? I mean, it's yeah. And so, you know, lots to think about, and maybe at some point it calls for us maybe doing a retreat to sort of think about. But we need to do our homework first to figure out what, and I think we should get a little further down the road. But just big decisions to sort of make about, you know, how we want to use these assets to the benefit of the people we're charged to serve, and that can change, and it should change sometimes. Is there anything else?
So the last thing that I wanted to mention was you may have noticed the history wall right outside our doors here. So I want to make sure that you all get a chance to take a look at it, read all of the captions. We're just excited. I think it came out beautifully. So we're very happy.
Permanently.
It's permanent. Yes.
It was laser printed on the wall over like 15 hours over 2 days.
Yeah.
And hats off to Ken Bodden, who, I mean, we are so lucky to have that guy back, and really piece together a beautiful thing for us.
Well, and also hats off to Mike, because he really pushed to help us sort of truly imagine how this could come out. And so this was several iterations. And so thank you for really challenging us to make it as beautiful as it is.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all of it. But there's a lot to that. And it's great. Yeah. Oh, what? Yeah.
I've had interactions with him at Chalmers.
Yeah. We'll take it offline.
Yeah?
I said, well, let's take that offline outside.
Okay. Wanted to roll that out.
At the last board meeting, though, one last thing. The last board meeting, I think I shared with you that we have a departure coming soon. But Gloria wasn't here at the time. And I, since we last met, I can't say it's gotten any easier to think about her leaving. After so many years of being here and really being, you know, a big part of the heart and soul of the place, you know, figuring out that next iteration of what HR is going to look like and trying to, she has some skills and things that are going to be very, very hard to replicate. I understand why it's time. Doesn't make it any easier, but I just wanted you all to know it's a time of transition and pain and somewhat painful transition. And we love Gloria, and I just wanted to give you a chance to say a word of advice to the board.
I thought Mike had informed all of this. He's like, I've been telling him. I was like, I thought he knew. But it is time. I've been here. When I leave, it will be 29 years. So I grew up here in a sense. I came from St. David's Healthcare. That was my job my second job out of college. And being in Hawker, I learned a lot about public housing, more than I thought I would ever know and needed to know. And I'm able to explain it a lot. But I've seen a lot of transition, a lot of movement within the agency. Oh, I'm sorry. I think the recording's off. But when I started in 1997, we only had about 97 employees at the time. We were under 100. And Jim Hargrove came in, and we started hiring immediately. I was a specialist at that time. And
my boss left 6 months after I started, so I was like, okay, I got to take the reins and do this. And so we grew, and we grew, and we grew. And we are now over 250 employees. I remember when Southwest Housing started in 2000, I was planning our wedding at that time in the middle of getting them started, and I still don't remember how I got all of that done. But I hired 30-something employees and got them on board and started in July, and I got married in August. So I'll always remember Southwest Housing because we celebrate the same anniversary. So those are some of the milestones. And then, you know, transitioning and having Mike come in, and it's been different and it's been challenging and it's been rewarding to see how our agency has grown and changed throughout the years. And having Sylvia working with her and the rest of the team, it's been an honor and it's really been a pleasure. We have a very talented group of people that work here. We have dedicated people that work hard. They work hard and they believe in the mission and what we do here. And I believe in the mission of what we do because I understand that without us, we're, you know, homelessness is the next step. And I never want to see that for anyone. But I just want to say thank you to the board for always being receptive, for being kind, for being welcoming to me. And to John and Edwina, thank you for always inviting us to your Christmas celebration. That was one of the highlights of his Christmas holiday because his birthday was around that time. So we got to celebrate his birthday. But I just want to say thank you to Mike, Sylvia, all of you guys. I feel like I'm on a farewell tour or something. There's still time. I will be here until the end of May, maybe the first week of June, until we get a replacement for me. So there's still some time. I'm not staying till July. No, I will be on a beach somewhere.
Not permanent selfish, but no, I think selfish goals will get us.
Oh, I've already talked to her about that. Yes, yes.
Fortunately, unfortunately, Sylvia lives down the street from me and knows where I live.
Get in the car.
So she knows where I am, so I'll have. No. Yeah, I have some things, you know, I want to do and some volunteer work within the community where I live. I live in Round Rock, so, you know, an hour drive back and forth one way, 2 hours on the road is kind of time consuming and has not allowed a lot of time for me to do some of the things that I really like to do. Yes. 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 So. It's time. It's time. I told the team the other week when I announced that I never want to stand in the way of someone else having an opportunity to advance in a position and become have an opportunity to have a job. So it's time for me to step away. Yes. Mm-hmm. We are working with a consulting agency or executive recruiting agency, Gans & Gans. They're based out of Florida. They actually brought us Barbara Chin. So I'm working with Simone to get someone in. So I think she started sourcing already.
Yeah, and it's a big position, and we will probably want to get, as we've done with some other big positions, you know, we've usually asked you all to take a peek as well, because you know it's important that person work well with the board as well. Mm-hmm. Can I mention three other quick things?
Sure.
One is. I'm so glad I've fought so hard to get this good lady to take a vacation. And do you want to tell where you're going?
Yes, I am going next Tuesday. I will be on a flight heading to Tokyo. I have a friend, Tokyo, Japan. I have a friend. She runs marathons. She qualified for the Tokyo Marathon. So I will be heading out with her, her sister, her husband, and another friend. So there will be six of us and her contingency that's going. And who knows how many other people will be there running, but we're going to be there for about 2 weeks.
One thing you must do while you're there is ride the bullet.
Oh, we are. We're taking the bullet train from Tokyo to Kyoto.
Good, yes. Good. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You must do
it. The other thing I wanted to mention is Gloria was spent her career making a difference, you know, here for, you know, all of us and for our families. Meanwhile, John was offering a huge difference in the lives of lots of kids here in town. And there were two opportunities to honor him. I thought maybe you mentioned it. It was so cool.
Mm-hmm. Most of you know John was a teacher in AISD. He had taught for about 25, 30 years in AISD. His last game that he coached was against Crockett High School in Navarro, and that's when he got sick after that game. So at last, when was it, March the 7th, 8th, at that game, they honored him, and they're going to put up a plaque with his picture on it outside of the gym. Navarro is actually getting a new gym built, so that picture will be placed outside of their gym, the new gym at Navarro. He always taught at underserved schools, underprivileged schools, and that was his passion because, you know, even though he went to a school, if you ever been to Topeka High, they have marble floors, guys. It is a cathedral school. It really is. It's beautiful. They have marble inside of that school. And it's a generational school. His mother graduated from there. All of his siblings did as well as our last niece. She graduated from there a few years ago. And he was on a state championship basketball team in 1986. And they inducted the team into the Topeka Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame. High school there, and I went for that ceremony and got to meet his teammates that he played with at that time, and it was really nice. It was very rewarding to help me understand how he became the way that he was and why he was such a giving person back into the lives of the students that he taught, because that is how he was raised and that was what was poured into him, and he just felt he had to give back, and he did. You know, he didn't come from privilege at all, and we always teased each other and said we grew up the same, but just in different cities. So we're very similar backgrounds.
And one of his teammates who's being honored, who's up there with him, was
City Manager T.C. Broadnax. John and he grew up together, and actually I sat next to Mr. Broadnax at the ceremony. So, and he. He would come visit John when John was in the hospital and stuff, and his wife knew John. So it was quite interesting when he was wanting to apply for that job. He called, and we were like, oh, no, you may want to. But he really was excited.
I was a building more than
you know, and but he took on the challenge, and he's been so kind and gracious to me during this time as well.
Well, we'll have more opportunities to celebrate Gloria, but I thought you should hear it straight from her. We're going to work her to the very end.
Yes, you have, man. Yes. What else is new? I wouldn't expect anything else, Mike.
More to come. Anything else for the common good that we need to share? I see a good team here. Anything else that folks want to? We're all just here part of the We Love Gloria. Okay, great. Madam Chair, I think we're ready to adjourn. Yeah.
There's nothing else for us to look at. And I
heard for this week. I heard Commissioner Carrington second. Thank you, Lena.
Thank you all for the years you've been here.